Well, Chester, I have another guest right here in the studio.
Hark.
And her name is Sarah Gerstenzang. Sarah is recently the former assistant project director of the Adoption Exchange Association, which is the group, by the way, that produces that public service announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why she's the former is because starting in September, she will be the new executive director of New York State's Citizen Coalition for Children.
Ooh.
Now, just based on that, I wanted her as a guest on this radio program, but
mm-hmm.
I also had the pleasure recently of reading a book that she had written about her experiences being a foster parent called Another Mother, co-parenting with the foster care system. So she learned a lot about, and she really came to this work as a traditional foster parent, and I wanted her to tell a little bit of her story of what she had learned during her personal ride and how that's going to affect her work at Citizens Coalition for Children. So welcome, Sarah.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to be here.
All right. So why don't we talk a little bit about what motivated you to write the book?
Actually, it was my brother-in-law who suggested it to me. He said, you should keep a journal. This is amazing, this whole process you're going through, and, you know, what an incredible story. And also, I got so many questions from people. Anywhere I went, they would ask me about it. Oh, what's it like? How do you, you know, what do you have to go through to become a foster parent? What's going to happen? And, you know, as I got all these questions, I started keeping a journal of what was happening every day or every week. And then from that, those notes, I actually put the book together.
Did you think that you might be keeping a journal to publish a book someday, or we?
I vaguely had that in my mind that I might write something from it, mm-hmm. but it really was kind of therapeutic for myself,
right.
Because it can be very stressful, and so as I went through it, it was very helpful for me to just write notes down and to remember things that had happened a few months before. And then as I got into that, it just became this like little project that I was completely motivated to do for myself, which was to research like the law and the policy that was impacting what was happening to us and to the birth family and to our daughter as we were going through it. Like, you know, how many visits were there? Why were there visits? What was the law on that? You know, what were the roles of the different people at the mm-hmm. visit supposed to be? Could the birth father come just show up one day and come take her back? And just all those kinds of questions that would pop up. I would find books that would answer those questions. I read all about it. And then, you know, I felt comfortable and confident with what we were doing. And you know, it just kind of added to the story.
So now the publisher is Vanderbilt University Press.
That's right.
And so they were very convinced that this is a book that they wanted to publish. What do you think their primary motivation or their primary target audience was for wanting to publish the book?
Well, they were extremely supportive, actually. There's wonderful folks who work there. But they have a focus on publishing books by professionals who have personal experience in the field. So,
did not know that.
Yeah, so that my book actually just fit their mission very neatly, and so they were just very supportive. And actually, when I met with the editor at one point, he was telling about a child in his neighborhood that he and his wife had become sort of like foster or godparents to.
Right.
And so it was kind of, I think everybody has their own personal story, too. So, you know, people get very involved.
Hey, Chester, we might have an in here, you know? We might get to write that book now.
Yeah,
there you go.
So what was one of the major things that you feel your book teaches? Let's say people become foster parents or want to become foster parents. What is it that you were trying to get? What message were you trying to get to them?
Well, I was trying to teach people about why we have the law and policy that we do and how it impacts them. I think it's very important. Obviously, the people are actively in the system. I think the foster parents are the most important professionals involved in the child's life. Of course, their birth parents are extremely important, but sort of as a professional role, you have lawyers, you have social workers, but who is taking care of that child every single day? It's the foster parents, and I think we should be educated about the things that impact us and so that we can advocate for positive change.
And isn't it true they're almost given the least amount of respect even though they know the most about that individual child?
Yes, it is so true. And every time we would have a new caseworker, I would feel like we would start back at zero. And then I feel like, you know, they were often suspicious and I would have to prove myself again and my husband and that we were good parents and we were doing the right thing. And so before they would trust us, and it was very frustrating sometimes. At the end, actually, as I was working on the book, and at the end of our sort of our story, where we ended up actually adopting the first child that came to us,
right.
I would sit in meetings with notes, and it really, as I would start to get very stressed, but then just writing down exactly what was being said and knowing how perfectly it would fit in the ending of my book really took off the, it sort of was my own little private chuckle, helped me get through it. So,
but there are big issues that you're talking about as well. For instance, like the person who has the most information rarely gets enough opportunity to speak to a judge about the information that they have. So, and the judge's basic decision is based on generic caseworker number 432, and they never even have a chance to talk to you.
Exactly. And you're the one, especially if you've had the child since the time they came into care, and you've been meeting with the birth family, you actually have the most information about the child. So you're in the position to really help make good decisions about what should happen. And while foster parents are invited to come to court hearings, they're not mandated to come. And so they're often, and in fact, we were actively discouraged. We were told most foster parents don't come. And, you know, and I had to really say, well, I think we're entitled to come. Oh, well, yeah, I guess you are. But, you know, most don't bother. And they really tried to discourage us. And it was a way I didn't actually say much, but I was able to gather a lot of information.
That's another good point.
That was really important to us. We had a child in our home that we were growing very attached to. We have other children in our home, and it was hard to go month to month to month, not really knowing what was happening. And so it was important that you know, that we knew what was happening, and also could share things with the caseworker if we felt that accurate information wasn't being shared in the courtroom.
And you came to this work specifically knowing that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to be a foster parent. You didn't want to be an adoptive parent when you started.
Correct.
What was your thinking about choosing to be a foster parent?
My husband and I had both always been very interested in being foster parents. We had two birth children, and we just thought we liked parenting a lot. We thought it would be a great opportunity to help some other families. We've been very lucky. We came both from very poor families, but we've done very, you know, very comfortable now. And so we thought that it would be an enjoyable way to give back to the community. Also, my husband did spend about 5 months when he was an infant with a kinship care arrangement. And maybe that influenced us a little bit. I mean, they'd still send him cards when he was in college. You know, they obviously had grown very attached, that family, to him. And
your family's mission would have been to really help the children return home to their own parents.
Right. That's exactly what we had in mind. We thought, okay, we'll do this a few times. We'll help some families, you know, get back together, because our kids were very young still. So we were kind of in that very active, you know, going to the park every weekend kind of stage of parenting. And then we thought, you know, then we'll move on. You know, our kids will go to college, and that's not quite what happened.
Right. Well, you know, and now you did mention that you adopted your first foster child, who's your who's your daughter now.
Right.
I was just wondering if being a foster parent affected at all the difference about openness after the adoption. I mean, do you have any contact with the family after, even though, of course, you had to have a lot of contact before when you were trying to help reunite them?
Right.
How did that or in general in foster care as well? Do foster parents tend to have more openness with the birth families?
Sure. Well, you're mandated to go to visits together, and so that certainly was something that was very intimidating to us initially.
Yeah.
And but actually, I think it's really kind of a silver lining of adoption from foster care, because over the 2 years that we did visits, we really got to know our daughter's birth family, and I think that's incredibly important for her, that I have all this history. I mean, she was young, she doesn't remember. I have photos. I've met her grandmother. We have a little cute picture of her and her grandmother up in her room.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of ongoing contact with them, which is these situations can be complicated. But
and you were allowed to know their names and stuff. So if your daughter needed to know something when she grew up, you have access to information that people who just did adoption wouldn't have.
Right. And over 2 years of visits, you just pick up little bits of information.
Yeah.
I know, you know, what kinds of food they like. You know, just all those little things.
Yeah.
So it really was a blessing, I think. And I think it really opened my eyes to how important it is to accept, you know, you're not just adopting a blank slate. You're adopting somebody who comes from a whole history, and that's really important. And actually, we wish we knew more rather than less.
Yeah.
And it's I think people think of it as threatening. It's really
and,
not.
And why didn't you know more? You didn't know to ask for certain information that you could have gotten if you thought about asking? What more, when you say you wish you knew more?
Primarily, actually, you know, you feel very vulnerable as a foster parent. And as soon as we realized almost a little less than a year into it that we would end up being the adoptive parents, it's kind of a crazy story. You could follow the whole thing in the book if you're interested. But
yes.
Once we realized that we were going in that direction, I'm sorry, I've just lost my...
Do you remember?
Yeah, it was just more, you wanted to know what more information.
Oh, yes, okay, yes. Sorry, yeah, yes. I was getting
Thank
wrapped
you.
Up in that thought. Yes, and, you know, you get very intimidated often as a foster parent, and so while there are a lot of questions I really wanted to know the answer to, and I felt that we, you know, maybe in those files or could be asked for, you know, by the end, my husband was saying, don't ask anything else. You know, you're going to slow it down. They're going to get pissed at us. And you really do. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. But you feel that they have, and they do, they have the authority to pull that child out of your home at any time. So you're weighing and you're saying, well, wait a minute. What's more important, that, you know, the child that we love stays with us and that there's no, you know, other than the process that you're going through, the thing, you're vulnerable in that. But why would you throw other things out there to make it yourself even more vulnerable? So we just decide, you know, certain things I'd ask for, but if it wasn't readily available or it seemed like they weren't interested or, and also, you know, because, you know, we had four caseworkers by the end, no, and they were all fairly young. No one knew a lot of the details. It would have really taken a lot of time for somebody to sit down with the birth family and really review the records, and I didn't feel that anybody either had the time or wanted to do that. It's difficult.
Now, you know, you got to believe we're recruiting homes for teens and preteens. And occasionally people come to us wanting younger kids, and we basically say to them, if you want to adopt younger kids, probably the best way to do that is to sign up to be a foster parent, be sincere, you want to help the children return home, you really want to be the parent's ally. However, if it falls through and you have that child over 12 months, then you are entitled to be the first person to ask to adopt. Now, is that what advice would you give? I mean, because that's what we say to folks who want younger kids, because there's just not a lot of younger kids who are just totally freed for adoption.
Right.
But that is a, I think that's a, I mean, from a kid level, if a parent is committed to doing what's best for the individual child that comes to them, that's almost a good way to give the kids some permanency as well. So if they don't return home, they're with the person
right.
that they're going to be staying with.
Right.
So I was just wondering what you think about giving that type of advice. And
I think it's good advice. I mean, I think, you know, we went into it thinking, oh, we can be foster parents and we can just take that role, and, you know, just didn't really think how many kids end up becoming available for adoption. Number one, our daughter did come to us very quickly. I mean, it was 2.5 months after we were put on the list, and she was 5 weeks old. We had said we'd take a child birth to 2 years. But, you know, I think it is very, very hard. The hardest part is keeping yourself vulnerable to having this child leave you. But it is, you have to, their best interest is to stay with their birth family, if at all possible.
Right.
And it's really, I can't say how hard it is. It's, that's the thing that you're doing that's really giving something. You're staying with your child so they can have that security, and you're suffering in a way from, because it's so hard, but you're doing the right thing, and it's very hard to hold yourself in that position. I have really changed in that. I used to think, oh, you know, you can be a, you know, foster parent, and, you know, and then the plan will be made for that child. I think if you take a child into your home, unless it's just impossible for you to keep them, rather than have that child move and attach to somebody, it's almost unhuman. I think, and I know how hard it is for people, and it's, you know, people are at different stages of their lives, and but as adults, I think that's the role that we have to step up and take.
You know, and that's interesting, because a significant part of your book, you were hoping that she returned home. But if she didn't, you were going to bridge her to her adoptive home.
Right.
You weren't actually thinking about being the resource. But so you've done a big shift even since you published the book.
Right. Well, also our our daughter was supposed to be placed with a half sister too, right. So that we had already kind of a plan B.
Okay.
We were like the backup plan. And
you had a picture in mind of where she would be going if she were to move on for adoption.
Right, that had been the plan, yeah. And then that sort of fell apart at the last minute. But it's and they tell you in all the orientations. I mean, it's a little disingenuous. They say basically people don't adopt this way. It's really they don't want.
Even though 60-80% of all the kids in New York City are actually adopted by their foster parents, they say that
they really de-emphasize it. This is not way to come and
yeah.
They don't want. And it's really tough work. They
yeah.
caseworkers
yeah.
don't want families coming to them saying, you told me it was possible that I'm and here I am. I'm heartbroken. I'm
yeah.
fine. I think it's just there's so much education that needs to be put in place to really make people understand if this were your birth child, how would you feel? This is what we have to do, which is best for them.
Because you're going to be the new executive director of Citizens Coalition for Children in New York State, I want to lobby for something right now. One of the things that I feel would be really good to start getting the idea out there is to actually do grief groups for foster parents
mm-hmm.
and actually start out from telling them
right.
that we want you to attain grief groups so you can still be strong foster parents for us, because it's almost, especially if you have a nasty relationship with the birth parent,
mm-hmm.
it's almost as if your child dies if
mm-hmm.
they go home.
Right.
Whereas, what we're trying to teach now is a family-to-family model where maybe they can still remain some form of extended family.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the biggest fear that people have is actually losing the kid to a good plan, and that
right.
is returning home. But then when that happens, there's a lot of sadness in that grown-up that goes on that almost never gets acknowledged in any real way.
You are so right, Pat, and especially if the foster parent doesn't feel that it's the best plan.
Yeah,
I think it's really important to have everybody at the table talking about what's going to happen, and so that the foster parents aren't left out of the planning
yeah.
and at the last minute, oh, no, she's going home next week, and that's when you find out about it. It's really important
yeah.
to be
that's almost cruel if that's going on, and I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it's really hard, and it's, I think it's very important to acknowledge those changes, and I think it's also important to acknowledge when foster parents go to adoptive parents. It's
yeah.
such,
that's
you talk
true.
About unconditional, commitment, and that's
yeah.
exactly, you're going from a place where you're saying, oh, I can give this child back.
Right.
I'm nurturing her.
Right.
Then you're the adoptive parent, and you're thinking, oh, my God, I'm unconditionally committed
right.
to you. How could I have been there 2 months ago? It's really a transition, and it's, it's incredibly exciting and wonderful,
yeah.
but it's, these are very emotional roles.
Now, if somebody wanted to get the book that you had written, Another Mother Co-Parenting with the Foster Care System, by my guest is Sarah Gerstenzang, and actually, for years I thought your name was very difficult to pronounce, but it's not. It's Gerstenzang, and that's exactly how you spell it
right,
as well.
True.
What's the best way for them to get it?
Just to go on Amazon, actually.
Yeah.
You can request it at your local bookstore, but Amazon is inexpensive and speedy.
It's true, and not that I've done this with your book, but other books, I've managed to get them for like 3 cents and then pay the shipping. I mean, Amazon's
right.
actually very interesting. But,
right.
but yours, and also the price is very reasonable on Amazon, so that's a good place to look.
Yeah.
Anything else that any way for people to reach you if they wanted to speak to you directly or through email or anything?
Oh, sure,
else?
They could email me at sarahgerstenzang@gmail.com. That's my email address.
Okay.
So.
Now we will spell Gerstenzang.
Okay.
It's Gersten, Gerstenzang, Zang, Zang. So, and that's Sarah Gerstenzang
yep.
at gmail.com.
Yep.
All right. We only got a few more minutes left, and I just wanted to encourage you guys to give us a call. You can call us right now in the office. We're there at 718-372-3003. And if the lines are so busy that my workers don't get a chance to pick up, call us first thing tomorrow morning at 718-372-3003. And understand, when you call, we're going to invite you to an orientation this week. We got orientations in 9 different locations in and around New York City every single week. Every Monday night in Yonkers, every Tuesday night in the Bronx, every Tuesday night right here in Suffolk County in Holtsville, every Wednesday night in Coney Island, Brooklyn, every Thursday night in Staten Island and Uptown in Harlem, every Saturday morning in East New York, Brooklyn, every Saturday afternoon right here in Nassau County in Rockville Center, and every Sunday night in Jamaica, Queens. So we got a location for you, and we want everybody to learn about it, so give us a call, 718-372-3003. 3003. So I'd just like to end the way we usually end, and I'll start with a prayer for you parents to consider, and that prayer is, to the world you may be just one person, but to one person you just might be the world, and that's why we want you to come in and learn about this. And, of course, we end the way we always end with the adopted teen's prayer, and that prayer simply is, may you love me the most when I deserve it the least, because that's when I need it the most. Good night, Chester. Good night, Tyra.
Good night,
everybody else.
Thanks so much.